Welcome to the Changing Climate of the American West, a regional call-in special. I'm Larry Mantle of NPR member station KPCC in Los Angeles. This morning, we're connecting public radio stations in Colorado, Arizona, Nevada, and California. We're inviting listeners throughout the West to call in with ways they see climate change most affecting their state. We'll talk with reporters from NPR stations carrying this live broadcast. And we'll also examine the climate proposals from the 2020 presidential candidates. It's the Changing Climate of the American West, a regional call-in special. We'll start right after the news. Welcome to the Changing Climate of the American West, a regional call-in special. I'm Larry Mantle of NPR member station KPCC in Los Angeles. We're linking public radio listeners in Arizona, Colorado, Nevada, and California. Our broadcast is part of the national week-long journalism project, Covering Climate Now. The purpose of this regional call-in special is twofold: to hear what each state is facing in specific climate challenges and to assess the differences between the 2020 presidential candidates' climate change proposals. What specific proposals would you like to hear from the candidates? And is there a candidate who dovetails with your priorities? If so, is she or he giving you enough detail on how they would pass and implement their plan? Our regional call-in number is 866-893-5722, 866-893-5722. You can also tweet using the hashtag #CoveringClimateNow. Now, we begin with KPCC Los Angeles science reporter Jacob Margolis. Jacob, good to have you with us. Let's talk first about California, and what do climate scientists say is one of the biggest concerns with the changing climate here?
Yeah, we're looking at wildfires, and wildfires have clearly been in the news the past several years. Really, the last 20, Cal Fire keeps a running list of the last 20 largest fires. Currently, 16 of those have occurred since 1999. Like, that's a lot. And that part of that has to do with urbanization. The more that we've urbanized, pushed into the urban-wildland interface, they become more destructive. And, you know, flashback to, you know, even last year, we're talking about the Camp Fire, where an entire town of Paradise was lost. So these things can be absolutely catastrophic.
And we see the effects of prolonged drought. California has been throughout its history subject to extreme periods of drought, but we've seen some of the most intensive ones on record recently.
Yeah, absolutely. And as climate change progresses, there's indications that we will swing back and forth between periods, long periods of dryness and short, intense periods of wetness. And what we saw during the Thomas Fire a few years ago, which burned pretty much all the way into the ocean, I mean, in December, which was crazy during our rainy season, was that we came off a period of drought, got a lot of rain, all of a sudden all this, you know, all this vegetation grew up, and then it stayed dry during our rainy season. All of a sudden it was there to burn, and it was there to take out all of this old growth plants too that hadn't been burned for a long time. And then, of course, you get into the whole discussion of forest management.
Well, and let's talk about that, because I think people throughout the nation have heard about some of the leading edge climate policies coming out of the California legislature. But in terms of fire prevention or resources deployed for future fires, how's the state responding there?
Yeah, forest management, prescribed burns, all that kind of stuff, it's at the forefront of all of the concerns for Cal Fire and forest management. There's a huge debate around it. But I think that we kind of need to take it to the local kind of person building out in the middle of the forest level as well, and talk about, especially here in Los Angeles, we have a lot of people that build in areas that we know burn. For those people, they need to consider fireproofing their home as much as possible, which means clearing brush, clearing any trees, anything like that, and of course, making it easy for firefighters to get to them, because this will be a bigger concern going forward.
All right, Jacob, we'll talk a little bit later in the hour about the presidential candidates and their climate change proposals. Jacob Margolis covers science and the environment for KPCC, NPR member station in Los Angeles. You're listening to the Changing Climate of the American West, a regional call-in special. I'm Larry Mantle of KPCC in Los Angeles. We're linking listeners in Nevada, Colorado, Arizona, and California, part of the week-long journalism project Covering Climate Now. And you can tweet your thoughts about your local community, how you're most seeing the effects of climate change, and what your local officials are talking about as their biggest concerns for the place where you live and work. You can tweet using the hashtag Covering Climate Now. You can also call us and speak with fellow listeners throughout the American West, 866-893-5722, 866-893-5722. We're also asking reporters throughout the region that we're covering with this conversation today to share with us what's happening in their communities. And we welcome Colorado Public Radio energy and environmental reporter Grace Hood. Grace, here in California, the state legislature has passed aggressive targets for limiting carbon emissions. What sorts of climate measures have been discussed or passed in Colorado?
You know, we've had a very active session that wrapped up in the spring. For example, we had a climate action plan that was passed by state Democrats to reduce greenhouse gas emissions 90% by 2050. Also, bills to increase electric vehicle adoption and the establishment of one of the first in the country just transition offices from coal-based electrical energy economy. So that gives grants and things like that to coal workers.
Given that you've got an economy which is at least in part reliant on energy extraction with oil and gas, how are the competing interests playing out in the legislature?
Well, it's very interesting. One of the most contentious bills this past session was to shore up regulations for the oil and gas industry. And a lot of those focused on health and safety, but there's also going to be rules that will make Colorado methane emissions from oil and gas equipment even more strict. We already have some of the strictest in the country, and it's a really interesting narrative. While at the state level, at the federal level, things are really being rolled back. For example, the EPA methane rule related to oil and gas. Colorado's really doubling down on what was already some of the strictest regulations in the country for oil and gas and methane.
Let's also talk about tourism, another big industry for your state of Colorado. We've got everything from ski resort, vacationing centers in the Rockies, to other areas where you're reliant on people coming for the outdoors. What are some of the concerns about those industries, snowpack, water availability, the like?
Absolutely. Well, I think, your previous reporter just set things up so nicely. I mean, when you're talking about wildfires or even drought, that can, for example, last summer we had pretty severe wildfires and that steered some tourists away from the state. But then think about the ski industry. Mountain ecosystems are among the most vulnerable to climate alterations. And climate change is only going to exacerbate kind of existing problems with snowpack, which some years is quite low.
All right, Grace, thank you so much for filling us in on how Colorado is talking about climate change and its future effects. Grace Hood, energy and environmental reporter at Colorado Public Radio based in Denver. You're listening to the Changing Climate of the American West, an hour-long regional call-in special. I'm Larry Mantle of NPR member station KPCC in Los Angeles. We're hearing from listeners throughout the West in Arizona, Nevada, Colorado, and California. This part of the week-long journalism project from coast to coast, Covering Climate Now. You can tweet using that hashtag, Covering Climate Now. Let's talk with Mark, who's listening to KJZZ in Phoenix, Arizona. Mark, thanks very much. Your thoughts about what you'd like to hear from the 2020 candidates.
Well, you asked about the local changes that I've seen. When I was young, I don't remember seeing a whole lot of 120-degree summers, and now they're pretty common. Lake Powell gets low, and it scares the bejesus out of me. But I get worried about apocryphal stories of local climate change because climate change is global, and I hope that's not lost. The reason I'm calling in is because I hope that the candidates would listen to your show or you could get to them to really embrace nuclear. As I look at it, if they aren't embracing nuclear, they're simply not being honest or realistic with attacking climate change, and especially some of the newer technologies like molten salt reactors that are coming online. They should know about it if they don't, and they have a big benefit. They don't blow up.
Mark, I appreciate your call. As you might know, New Jersey's Cory Booker has been one of the candidates who's a proponent of nuclear, and he says the other candidates aren't being realistic if nuclear isn't part of the mix. It provides about 20% of electricity production throughout the country right now, and Booker says that's got to be part of the mix if you're going to get to zero carbon emissions. Mark, I appreciate it very much. Let's talk with Chris. Joining us in Modesto, California, listening to Capital Public Radio out of Sacramento. Chris, what's your biggest concern locally?
My biggest concern locally has to do with water. I've lived in the Central Valley for about 14 years, and I've seen a transition from flood irrigation. There's a lot of almonds grown out here, which are very water intensive, and other crops. We've seen lots of areas cleared out, and they're using drip irrigation, but it doesn't seem to be happening at as fast as pace as possible. And I'm just curious, because that seems to be a resource that we're, you know, basically letting evaporate. And I think that water scarcity, as things get worse with climate change, is going to be coming more and more to the forefront because of how many things in the food chain it affects.
I know here in Southern California that our water agencies are providing rebates and financial support for people to do rainwater capture, to move to drip irrigation in some places, Chris. But yes, that's often done very localized, and it depends on, you know, what sorts of dollars are set aside to do that, because moving to drip irrigation, for example, depending on the size of the property, can be an expensive endeavor. Chris, calling us from Modesto, listening to Capital Public Radio. This is The Changing Climate of the American West, a regional call-in special as we take this hour, 10 o'clock Pacific, 11 o'clock Mountain, to talk about what's happening in your local community with climate change and some of the ways that local and state bodies are taking this on to try and deal with it. Let's talk next from Capital Public Radio's environmental reporter, Ezra Romero. Ezra, thanks very much. Quickly before we break, share with us what the planning process is for Lake Tahoe, the state of California's biggest lake, adapting to climate change.
Yes, we have a podcast all about this called Tahoe Land. And in this podcast, we're talking about how everything is changing there, every level of society, everything from more rain instead of snow, more wildfires, and even a lake that could turn green. All these are the effects of climate change, and it's affecting everything from where low-income workers can live and how they get around, to casinos, to the lake itself. It's just really affecting Tahoe's winter identity as a place of tourism.
And we'll talk about that with Ezra Romero of Capital Public Radio in Sacramento as we continue. The Sierra Nevada, our huge tourist destination along California and Nevada's border. You're listening to The Changing Climate of the American West. We'll be back with you in 1 minute. This is The Changing Climate of the American West, a regional call-in special. Good morning. I'm Larry Mantle of NPR member station KPCC Los Angeles. We're hearing from listeners throughout the public radio audiences of Arizona, Nevada, Colorado, and California, talking about the biggest climate concerns in their communities: water supply, wildfires, agriculture, the cost of energy, sea level rise, snowpack, increasing ozone levels, wildlife habitats. Those are just a few of the many concerns throughout the West. And we're talking about how state and local officials and presidential candidates are responding. I'd like to hear from you as you talk with your fellow listeners throughout the West on public radio stations. Call us with your thoughts about the impact of climate change in your community specifically. We're at 866-893-5722. 866-893-5722. If you'd prefer to tweet, please use the hashtag #CoveringClimateNow. That's the title of a week-long journalism series done by print and broadcast and online journalists all this week across the United States. Right now, we're talking with Capital Public Radio reporter Ezra Romero, who covers the environment out of Sacramento, also hosts the podcast that Cap Public Radio does, Tahoe Land. You were talking about concerns, even the changing of water color and water quality at Tahoe. But what about the ski resorts in the Sierra Nevada, Ezra? How are they preparing?
Yeah, so with climate change, snow is one of the largest things that climate change is affecting. It means more rain instead of snow, or just these really extreme years where we have these 5 or 6 years of drought, and then the biggest snowpack on record. So these extremes, this lack of snow instead of rain, and having rain instead, is challenging ski resorts, mom-and-pop groups that all need snow to exist. So for some, like the mom-and-pop sleigh ride company, they're going out of business or having to rebrand themselves as a carriage ride company. But then the larger ski resorts are adapting by making snow. But the ones that don't have as much money, they're just having to wait till they feel the pain even more, or they just go out of business altogether. So it's sort of the lack of snow or the overabundance of snow is challenging Tahoe's winter identity, meaning that they're having to reinvent themselves because summers are getting longer in places like Lake Tahoe. And so like the summer recreation time is they're trying to capitalize on that. And so there's all these groups that want to open these businesses and get remote workers up there and all that kind of stuff.
So someone who could actually benefit from a warming climate. Ezra, thank you very much for talking with us about your reporting. It's with Capital Public Radio in Sacramento and hosts Capital Public Radio's Tahoe Land podcast about Lake Tahoe. Once again, we welcome your calls from throughout the West, whether you're listening in Las Vegas, Phoenix, Denver, listening in Sacramento, San Diego, the Central Valley of California, from the Rockies through the desert areas of southern Nevada, 866-893-5722, or tweet with the hashtag #CoveringClimateNow. Let's take another call from listener Jan in Camino, California, listening on Capital Public Radio out of Sacramento. Jan, thank you very much. What's the biggest concern in your community?
Biggest concern in my community, we are a relatively forested community. We are in the foothills of the Sierra in Northern California. And the biggest concern is having common sense practices, really looking through how to prepare for fire proactively ahead of time. Some of the ideas that have been floated over the last couple of years are concerning. The main one is the idea of leaving, thinning the forest so that there's 10 feet between the tops of trees. Which sounds, you know, like maybe that would help with fire protection. Cal Fire is my neighbor, and I've spoken with them and discussed it with them.
That's the state fire agency here.
Correct. And everyone seems to agree that if a wildfire gets going, that won't really help any more than any other type of clearing. The problem I see with it on my property, I have 4 acres of forest, and I aggressively cleared in an area just above my home, thinking that I would be better off doing that.
Yeah.
Previously, all we did was to remove brush and then get the branches, you know, trim the branches,
so,
anything dead, and then high up off the ground.
Jan, I'm so sorry because I got so many callers, but I appreciate you're talking about the lengths to which you're going on the property you own to try and control for fire. But I know there's debate about what are the best methods to pursue, and all of them come with significant costs. That's Jan in Camino, California. Also joining us is Dylan Simard, who's sustainability reporter for Cronkite News, news division of Arizona Public Broadcasting. Dylan, thank you for being with us.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So talk with us about the biggest concerns in the deserts of Arizona.
Well, I don't think I'm really rocking the boat by saying that Phoenix is a very hot city, but in 2014, there were 61 heat-related deaths in Maricopa County. 2018, the number was 182.
Wow.
It's over time steadily getting hotter here, and a lot of these heat-related deaths are probably going to be exacerbated in a future that will eventually also get hotter for Phoenix.
Yeah, so, and the expenditures, I'm assuming, to try and mitigate for that, whether it's protections for parked cars or giving people places that might be safe along the street that they could seek shelter. Are those sorts of things being discussed?
So there's a research group over at Arizona State University that's evaluating different types of shade and then comparing them relative to each other for how those might be funded and how effective they are at actually blocking shade and how people experience heat. And what they're finding is that as this research is influencing the cities and how they're planning for a hot future, things like artificial shade awnings are far superior than regular trees to block shade. And
expensive that. To do that, yeah. Dylan, thank you so much. Sustainability reporter for Cronkite News, a news division of Arizona PBS. Let's stay in Arizona. Talk with senior correspondent for NPR member station KJZZ in Phoenix, Brett Jaspers. Brett, good morning. What in the greater Phoenix area is top of mind?
Well, one thing that I cover is water. And as Grace was saying before, you know, with snowpack kind of going down, the implication for Arizonans is that there's less water going into the tributaries of the Colorado River and then the reservoirs of the Colorado River, just like Lake Mead and Lake Powell, like the caller kind of mentioned before. He was concerned about Lake Powell. So, you know, a declining snowpack really does kind of mean people in Arizona have to think a lot harder about their water use.
What about the costs associated with water use in Arizona?
Well, it's very complicated, and every different municipality or jurisdiction has their own portfolio of water, be it groundwater or from the Colorado or from some in-state rivers. However, you know, the city of Phoenix, just as an example, last year approved water rate increases, and this was mostly to make sure they could get groundwater from one part of the city into the northern part of the city, which receives a lot of Colorado River water. So the rate increase is 6% in 2019 and 6% in 2020. So that's just one example, the city of Phoenix. But, you know, the price of water, you know, people have told me that that will go up. It's just a matter of time.
All right. Brett Jaspers, thanks very much. And just quickly, agriculture in Arizona. I think many people who don't live in Arizona don't realize the size of the ag business there. What are the concerns there about rising heat?
Oh, well, water use and for agricultural use is 74% of our Colorado River water. So different farming regions have different, you know, different situations in terms of how much water they're entitled to and how strong their water right is. But, you know, there are some farmers in the central part of the state that are really feeling the heat with, so to speak, with the decrease in Colorado River water that everybody's expecting in the years to come.
Brett, thanks so much for talking with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
From NPR member station KJZZ in Phoenix, senior correspondent Brett Jaspers, you're listening to The Changing Climate of the American West, a regional call-in special. We're connecting listeners from throughout the West, describing the biggest climate concerns in their communities. Just a few of the concerns in the West we've talked about. There are many others I'm sure you'd like to bring to our attention, to your fellow public radio listeners throughout the region. We're taking your calls. 866-893-5722, 866-893-5722. You can also tweet using the hashtag Covering Climate Now. That's the title of a week-long series of coordinated journalism that's been done by broadcasters, print, online news gatherers, and commentators all this week, bringing attention to the climate. And as you might well be aware, more than 800 rallies have been scheduled today across the country. The Global Climate Strike, as it's called, being led by students already throughout Europe, portions of Asia. There have been gatherings of varying sizes to protest what the organizers say is global inaction or insufficient action when it comes to climate change. This was inspired by the activism of Swedish teenager Greta Thunberg. Once again, 866-893-5722. From Boulder, Colorado, listening to NPR member station KUNC. Jay, you're concerned about your community.
Yes, I'm concerned here in the Rocky Mountains. The quality of water has greatly diminished, even though we'll have record snowpacks, as your previous callers have mentioned, and then followed by droughts, all the way from the Front Range to high up on the Continental Divide at 14,000 feet. I've noticed personally an increase in algae levels, a decrease in oxygen in the water, which affects, you know, all the marine insects, fish, etc., and then also just the level of heavy metals and toxicity in the water from either whether it was mining or, you know, some sort of industrial process has also greatly increased. And I think it's important that we address the water, not just in Lake Tahoe, but all over the country, because that's a key to life.
Jay, do you feel like the Colorado legislature or your city officials in Boulder are grappling with this sufficiently? Are they talking about concrete ways of mitigating the effects locally?
No, unfortunately. You know, being here in Boulder, the city itself and the county is, you know, it really presents itself as economic and environmentally progressive. But, you know, as far as like boots on the ground goes and actual policy changes, I have not seen anything. And, you know, a lot of the water table around here has been terribly polluted by the processes of mining, whether it be the extraction or the process of chemicals being introduced to, you know, separate the ore from the earth that's taken out of a mine. And, you know, streams at 13, 14,000 feet. Orange and red and look like there's oil all over them.
Jay, I appreciate your call. Thank you for sharing what you've observed in Boulder, Colorado. Listening to NPR member station KUNC, Colorado Public Radio is a part of this regional broadcast connecting listeners in southern Nevada, in Arizona, California, and Colorado. Sandy, listening to KNPR Las Vegas. Sandy, thanks very much. What are you seeing in southern Nevada?
Hey there. Yeah, I worked for TSA for about 7 years until the last government shutdown. But anyway, I noticed more airplanes being grounded because of the heat levels. And so I feel like more planes being grounded, not being able to take off because of the heat levels, it will affect tourism in the long run.
And do you know what the threshold is of temperature that you have to ground planes?
I believe it's over 111, like 115, somewhere around there. There's just they can't take off after a certain temperature. I'm not quite sure the exact number, but it has seems to have been more planes grounded.
All right. And in your city, that's huge, given the significance of McCarran Airport. Sandy, thank you for calling us from Las Vegas, listening to NPR member station KNPR. With us from San Diego's KPBS environmental reporter, Eric Anderson. Eric, good morning. San Diego, what's one of the biggest issues?
Well, we have 70 miles of coastline here in San Diego County. And as you can imagine, as sea levels rise, that puts pressure on residences and businesses along the coast. In the southern part of the county, Imperial Beach is a low-lying community that's already grappling with some impacts of sea level rise. They had a storm back in January during the King tides that really kind of washed over that community and created flooding. So that's something that they're already having to deal with. A little further to the north, we have a lot of coastal bluffs and houses on top of those bluffs. And the rising sea levels are starting to undercut those bluffs and putting those houses in peril, and it's forcing local officials to consider plans of action around that. And infrastructure is in the way. San Diego's airport, an international airport, is in a low-lying area next to San Diego Bay. So as the water levels rise, it kind of puts that particular economic engine in peril.
We're talking with NPR member station KPBS reporter Eric Anderson, who covers the environment throughout San Diego County. I was also wondering about some of the human-made parts of San Diego County. Mission Bay, for example, dredged out of the wetlands there and created. Are some of those areas particularly susceptible to sea level rise?
I think they all face different challenges. One thing about Mission Bay, which used to be that big wetland area that would kind of serve as a buffer for the coast, those wetlands are not there anymore. There's an effort in the northern edge of San Diego or Mission Bay to kind of restore some of that wetland to create that buffer. But I think that everybody just kind of looks at the coast, and there's a recognition locally here that this is an issue that needs to be considered and dealt with. But everybody just kind of looks at the coast and considers the future and thinks about how they might have to adjust to accommodate how the planet's climate is changing.
In some of the North County communities like Del Mar, where there is a threat from seawater intrusion, are there discussions of seawalls or other mitigation plans and what the cost for that would be?
Sure. There are a lot of discussions, as you can imagine, among private homeowners, among city officials there. And I think the real challenge for a lot of those communities with coastal assets that are under strain or under risk is that, you know, where does the city's responsibility lie? Where do the private property owner's responsibility lie? Obviously, if you have a blufftop home, where the ocean is starting to undercut that bluff and potentially your property could tumble in, you want to do what you can, but you can't do it in and of yourself. You can't just arbitrarily put some kind of armoring along the coast to protect that bluff. There are processes you have to go through. The city of Del Mar is, you know, looking at a neighborhood that might be underwater in 15 years. How do you deal with the property values there? That's a big concern for the people who have very expensive homes in that area. So a lot of these issues are being discussed and talked about, but I don't think we're anywhere close to what the appropriate resolution would be.
Eric, good to talk with you. Thanks so much. Eric Anderson, environmental reporter at NPR member station KPBS San Diego, which covers the entire county. Just one of the many stations over which you're hearing the changing climate of the American West, a regional call-in special. I'm Larry Mantle of NPR member station KPCC in Los Angeles. We're bringing together listeners and reporters from Arizona, Colorado, Nevada, and California, this part of the national week-long journalism project Covering Climate Now. You can use the hashtag Covering Climate Now to tweet what's happening in your community or what local officials are considering in the way of future climate threats. You can also call, as those who will be joining us momentarily have done, 866-893-5722, 866-893-5722. We've got some tweets that I'll be sharing coming up momentarily. We'll continue with our regional call-in special in 1 minute. This is The Changing Climate of the American West, a regional call-in special heard on public radio stations in Colorado, Arizona, Nevada, and California. We're hearing some of the specific challenge of climate change in each part of the southwestern United States and talking about some of the differences in the 2020 presidential candidates' climate platforms, which we'll get to momentarily. Let me share some listener comments. Doug joins us from a town north San Juan, close to Paradise, California. He's listening to Capital Public Radio out of Sacramento. It says, my concern living near Paradise is that insurance companies are raising rates for everyone because of the wildfire threat. We've invested thousands of dollars in clearing vegetation and trees around our house. Claire in Phoenix says, I live in an area up against the mountains, and because of heavy rains, we've had mudslides coming into my house. Climate change is a huge concern for us. Meg in Ojai in Ventura County of Southern California, listening on KPCC, talking about the need to consider the reintroduction of beavers to the West. They help sequester water and wonder if they could be helpful to the environment. William in Nyland, listening to KPBS San Diego. I teach and do hang gliding. I've seen a real change in weather over the last 40 years. The winds have become far more extreme. That I see as a result of climate change. And William says, I don't think any of the candidates have been serious enough enough about addressing it. So there's something in industry or recreation you wouldn't even think about climate change having an effect. William seeing it with hang gliding. Bonnie listening in Mesa, Arizona, the east side, Maricopa County, listening to KJZZ Phoenix. The air quality, the Valley of the Sun's been terrible. We have record hot days, record numbers of bad air quality days. We also see fewer birds, and we have cricket invasions. I think it has to do with the escalating heat. That's Bonnie calling from Mesa, Arizona. You can once again share your comment by calling us at 866-893-5722 or tweet using the hashtag covering climate now. Let's talk next with from the Central Valley, listener Julie, who joins us from Davis, listening to Capital Public Radio. Julie, briefly, what are you seeing in your community?
Hi, I live in the Central Valley where there are lots of dairies and pastures where cows and sheep are raised, and I'm really concerned that animal agriculture is a leading cause of greenhouse gas emissions, and we don't talk about that. We use a lot of water, and there's a lot of water pollution that's associated with animal ag, and it's really inefficient to grow food to feed these animals, and then we turn around and eat those animals and their products. I just think that's crazy.
Well, Julie, the economy, though, of the area you live in is heavily dependent on agriculture, and dairy's a part of that, too. So you think that your area would be able to economically sustain fewer dairies?
Well, absolutely. The economy is dependent on that. And just as Michigan has been highly dependent on the auto industry for a long time, and Appalachia has been highly dependent on coal. So we need to think now, what can we do to help these people? Absolutely. We don't want to leave them high and dry, so to speak. What can we do to help them transition?
All right, Julie, I appreciate it. Calling from Davis, listening to Capital Public Radio in Sacramento. Joining me now is Nevada Public Radio staff writer and reporter Heidi Kaiser, who joins us from Las Vegas. Heidi, thanks so much for being with us. How's the Nevada State Legislature taking on climate?
Yeah, some folks are actually calling this past legislative session that ended in June the Clean Energy Summit, because so much legislation was passed having to do with clean energy and climate change in general. And there were something like 18 pro-conservation bills that passed, including several directly related to climate change. The big one was a carbon reduction planning mandate that has a goal of 28%, a reduction of 28% in greenhouse gas emissions by 2025 and a 45% reduction by 2030. And the state has a mandate now to set a plan to get there and to report on the state's progress every year. And then in addition, there was an increase in our renewable portfolio standard from 25% by 2025 to 50% by 2030 and 100% renewable energy by 2050. So those are just two of the big ones, but there were several clean energy and conservation bills that passed this session.
Given tourism is an economic behemoth in Las Vegas, what are some of the ways that the larger properties are dealing with the effects of climate change or even potentially escalating electricity costs in the future?
Well, Mandalay Bay installed its own solar array on its roof several years ago, and hotel properties up and down the strip have had various climate change or sustainability plans for a decade or more in some cases. But interestingly, in regards to the climate protest that's happening today or the walkout, the students in Las Vegas who are protesting are gathered in front of the Venetian as a means of protesting that hotel's resistance to getting on the climate change fight.
Interesting. So they've gone right to one of the most visible properties along the strip to do that. Las Vegas, of course, as it has built up as much as any city in the West over the past couple of decades, you've seen a temperature increase there, too, because of these essentially the concrete effect.
Yeah, that's probably the most visible or the most stark indication of what's happening here. It's like people talk anecdotally about it getting hotter, but we can really feel it here. We had a record number of days over 105 degrees in August. A study by Climate Central earlier this year found that Las Vegas is the fastest warming city in the United States. Our temperature has risen 5.76 degrees since 1970. And there was another study that projected we're going to have something like nearly 100 days of temperatures over 100 degrees by 2100 if we continue on the current trajectory. So, you know, these are things we've just got constant ozone warnings and record. I know that Dylan mentioned people dying from heat-related illnesses. And, you know, we're seeing the same thing here. There was almost double the number of people dying from heat-related illnesses in 2017 compared to 2016. And so yeah, we can really feel it.
Yeah, understandably. Heidi, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Heidi Kaiser, staff writer and reporter, Nevada Public Radio, KJZZ, NPR member station in Las Vegas. Joining us now is Matthew, calling us from Tucson. Matthew, what have you witnessed as the effects of climate change?
Yeah, thanks for giving me the opportunity to share a story from the perspective of the Arizona Trail Association. We're a nonprofit organization that helps manage an 800-mile national scenic trail from Mexico to Utah, and it passes through a variety of climates, mountains and canyons and forests and deserts. And what we're seeing, of course, is not just disappearing water sources, which is a huge concern for anybody who's recreating outdoors, but also the wildfire season has essentially doubled. Typically, when we were looking at wildfires and when to plan for them and trail closures, we were usually looking at really kind of May through September. Now we're seeing fires start in March and then running through as late as October. And I think a lot of us take our natural resources and parks and canyons and forests for granted, and we just assume that they're there. But they're a massive contributor to Arizona's economy. $21 billion is the most recent figure. And although it's not all about the economy, it's an important conversation to have. That without recreational resources like these trails and forests, which affects climate change, we'll see a complete collapse in the economy of Arizona.
Matthew, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for talking about that and what a huge industry recreation is throughout Arizona. You're listening to The Changing Climate of the American West, a regional call-in special. I'm Larry Mantle of NPR member station KPCC in Los Angeles. We're linking public radio listeners in Arizona, Colorado, Nevada, and California, this part of a national week-long journalism project covering climate now. You can share your comments via Twitter using the hashtag covering climate now, or you can call us with your comment about what your local community is dealing with in climate specific change at 866-893-5722. And I want to correct my mistake. I just mentioned Heidi at Nevada Public Radio. You, of course, know your NPR member station is KNPR. I know that. Listen to it all the time when I'm in southern Nevada. So my apologies for making that mistake. Let's talk with more listeners. This one is from San Diego, KPBS listener Denise. Denise, share with us your thoughts.
Yes, here in San Diego, we actually are experiencing the effects of climate change with decreased wildlife corridors and increase in wildfire risk. And, you know, here in San Diego, we're at a crossroads because while we are experiencing these climate change issues, we also have an unprecedented pressure on elected officials to build market rate housing in the suburban areas. And these areas obviously contribute to climate change with increased GHGs and closing off wildlife corridors and putting pressure on water supplies, et cetera. And we need to, you know, if we were going to do something about climate change, we really need to figure out this whole housing climate balance.
And as you laid it out beautifully, Denise, because it is a huge challenge in throughout California. This is an issue where there's a housing shortage. And then the question is, where do you construct? And can you come up with enough infill units to meet demand? Or do you need to build more in open spaces? A number of large developments are proposed throughout L.A., San Diego, and Orange counties in the Inland Empire as well. And how do you balance that with the very environmental concerns that you're expressing? Let's talk next with Santan Valley, Arizona resident Ellen, listening on KJZZ and Arizona Public Radio. Ellen, what's the biggest problem you're seeing in your part of Arizona?
Well, the increased heat. It's been unbearable. And every year, we've lived here since 2002, the heat has become so such a factor in your daily activity, your daily comfort. Yes, we've had multiple heat deaths too, but the air is so dirty. We've had monsoon winds, no rain, basically, this summer. So the air alert days have become so frequent. I can't really think of too many days when you don't hear an air alert warning and the ozone warning here where we live.
It's hard to imagine Arizona without monsoonal rains in August and September. Do you recall previous years like that?
No. No, this has been extreme. There's just no rain. I mean, I think we might have had one little bit of sprinkle where I live in Santan Valley, but not much else. And I think the other problem, of course, for Arizona and for the country is water shortage. And I think that people are not trying hard enough, especially the HOAs, who turn their watering systems on, which are sprinklers that, you know, go across in arcing streams of water, and they water anytime from noon to 5 or 5:30.
Yeah, water usage huge in so much of the West, talking about the Homeowner Association from some of those communities, planned communities in Arizona. Ellen, thank you very much. You're listening to The Changing Climate of the American West, a regional call-in special. I'm Larry Mantle of NPR member station KPCC in Los Angeles. Also joining me is Jacob Margolis, KPCC science reporter. Jacob, I want to take a few minutes here just to talk briefly about the 2020 presidential candidates. And we know that there is a significant amount of alignment between them on policies, but there are some differences too. Bernie Sanders, for example, the most fiscally ambitious with a huge outlay to try and change reliance on fossil fuels.
Yeah, by far, $16 trillion, actually. A lot of the other candidates are around 5 or 10. You know, all of the candidates agree, like Green New Deal, in theory, good idea, although there's debate over how to implement different parts. They all agree that we should rejoin the Paris Climate Accords. That's a very symbolic thing. When you get down into the details, you can start to see that Sanders and Warren are really hot on curbing emissions, zeroing out emissions by 2030. The other candidates are shooting for 2050. That 2050 deadline is a big deal. We're supposed to go negative emissions basically after 2050 to hopefully prevent 1.5 degrees warming. A lot of scientists argue that, though, that's already baked in. If you break it down even further into nuclear energy, which we addressed earlier, you know, Sanders is the most no. Warren is against new plants. All the other candidates think that it has a role to play. You know, you get down into other issues like farming practices and whatnot that get a little bit more wonky. O'Rourke is someone that I heard talk about, actually, you know, incentives for farmers to plant cover crops, which can sequester carbon.
All right. Very good, Jacob. Thanks so much. Let's talk next with Eric joining us from Phoenix, listening to NPR member station KJZZ. Eric, I understand you're a lifelong Phoenix resident. What changes have you seen?
Well, for the most part, as somebody who's been here for a very long time, it is getting hotter and drier. Phoenix is typically well known for the monsoon season. They always talk about it. It's always played in the radio and TV. And the truth of the matter is, for the last 4 or 5 years, we do not have much of a monsoon season. We will get rain, we will get wind, and we will get dust, and we'll get storms, but we do not get water in the city part of the valley. I mean, we will wait for this all year, and they talk about the big monsoon season that comes. And as a previous caller mentioned, it is hotter, and those big storms that come during the summer just do not give water. They'll give lightning, which will make fire, and they'll give rain and dust. But with the heat that keeps getting more and more, we just do not get rain.
Not enough inches of rain. And as I'm sure you know from following the news on KJZZ, you know that the ongoing discussions over Colorado River water is a huge thing, and Arizona trying to get its share. California's, of course, the behemoth there with taking Colorado River water. And Eric, sounds like you're just concerned long term as your city has grown significantly about that resource.
Phoenix does continue to grow and expand, and there is a lot of talk about trying to conserve certain things, but the water usage of Phoenix is a very big concern, and it's just going to get worse as the years go on. As rain goes down, population goes up. Colorado River is not going to be able to cover it all.
All right. Eric, thanks so much for joining us from Phoenix. Dixie Lee, listening on Capital Public Radio, said we had a fire just a very short distance from me. I'm older. I have no transportation. I'm concerned that our town is just like paradise. I'm older, limited in what I can do, and I would like to see our local officials spend more time and resources helping older people clear their properties to help prevent the threat of wildfire. That's Dixie Lee in North San Juan listening to Capital Public Radio. And Kyler calls from Sacramento listening to Capital Public Radio, says, I'm originally from Ventura where the Thomas Fire burned such a huge swath. My neighbor's house burned to the ground. I've seen fires get worse and worse. And with Santa Ana winds, it creates a perfect storm. So Kyler in Sacramento talking about his concerns in Southern California. Want to thank all of our listeners who've joined us from throughout the American West. Many thanks to Colorado Public Radio, KJZZ in Phoenix, KNPR in Las Vegas, KPBS in San Diego, Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, and Cronkite News, part of Elemental, a regional collaboration on sustainability. All of them joining for the Changing Climate of the American West, a regional call-in special. And we welcome your continued conversation with your fellow listeners to public radio stations here in the West. You can do so by tweeting using the hashtag #CoveringClimateNow. Thank you so much for being part of this special broadcast on public radio stations in the West. I'm Larry Mantle of NPR station KPCC in Los Angeles. Have a good weekend.